Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I can't imagine how many times our next guest must have been told you're mad. Forget about it. It'll never happen. Clearly, he didn't listen. Good thing too, because Daniel Ferguson's IMAX epic, Jerusalem, is now rewriting the way Christians, Muslims and Jews view each other's special holy festivals. Daniel has already produced and directed documentaries and feature films for the Movie Network, the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, the National Wildlife Federation. But creating this 3D documentary set in and around the Dome in Jerusalem was by far his most demanding project to date. Daniel, thank you for joining us in Open House. Where did this mad idea find its genesis for you?
Oh, goodness. It's almost hard to remember. I mean, it's been at least 5 years. I mean, the genesis, it sort of grew out of another project that we did for IMAX, which was Journey to Mecca. I actually had the privilege of taking a crew of 85 Muslims into Mecca in 2007, 2008. And then after that, people said, this is incredible. You know, I had no idea that there were these connections between the Abrahamic faiths, you know, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Mm. Why not Jerusalem, one of the world's great cities? And that's kind of how the whole project got started.
Did you rewrite some of your own misconceptions about any of these faiths or all of them in the making of the documentary?
Oh, clearly all of them. I mean, I think, listen, I studied comparative religions and theology. I thought I knew something about Jerusalem, but I didn't. You know, I think that one's first trip to Jerusalem is absolutely transformative. Every assumption you have about this part of the world, about these three religions, about where our culture comes from, absolutely. I mean, I just was so humbled by my first experience. I think everyone is.
What is it? The grandeur, the shape, the history, the people?
It's all of the above, but I think for me it was the people. I mean, first of all, it's kind of terrifying, this prospect of trying to cram, you know, thousands of years of history into 45 minutes and to try and do it in a way that's inclusive so that everyone relates to it when they see it on the screen. But I think when one arrives, you realize very quickly that Jerusalem is many cities, both in archaeological terms, you know, buried one on top of the other, but also side by side, where you have all of these different solitudes. Everyone has their own Jerusalem, and yet they often don't even know of each other's Jerusalem. And that was something that occurred to me really quickly. And it makes the place so much richer, I believe.
Most directors and writers tell me they have the end goal in mind before they put pen to paper for that very first storyboard. What was your intention at the end of this?
Well, I could say that it was an organic process for me. I ultimately knew that I wanted to wow people and to take people to Jerusalem and the Holy Land in a way that they could never get as a tourist, so as a pilgrim for that matter. I wanted to do something novel. There's a lot that's been done about Jerusalem in terms of literature and television programs and even great documentaries, but I wanted to do something that was different, that challenged people's assumptions about this part of the world, and I guess make people realize that this is a place that no matter what our background is, this is somewhere we all come from, certainly in the Western world, and that in a sense, it's the cornerstone of Western civilization.
Daniel, the fact that it took 4 years to shoot means it wasn't a case of just rolling up, setting up, and calling action. Give me an idea of some of the torment, the trials and tribulations that went on around the shooting of this documentary.
Well, I made 14 trips there myself, and I moved my family for, I think, a period of 6 months, and it was, there was not an easy shot on this film, as you can imagine. I mean, most of those trips were about diplomacy, about building trust, to put the audience in interesting places, like in the air, 500 feet over the old city. And aerial photography hasn't been done over Jerusalem in close to 25 years. It's a strict no-fly zone. And it took us about 8 months. We negotiated with all the various authorities and finally got the permission to do that. That was a huge coup. And then just to get inside the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque, that took about 3 years of negotiations to get underneath the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, to see the ancient Jewish burial ground where many archaeologists cite as the most likely place for the burial of Jesus. This is another place that's off limits to the public. And again, this took the negotiation with six different church bodies and the Muslim family that holds the key to the door of the church. And so everything's difficult in this film. There's nothing that comes easy.
Added to the fact that it's shot in IMAX.
Oh yeah, I mean these cameras are the least conspicuous you can inconspicuous you can find. I mean they're like a washing machine, yeah. And they sound like a machine gun, and and there are two of them because we're shooting in 3D. You know, this whole movie is designed to work in 3D. And what I mean by that is we storyboard the film not only in terms of the emotional arc, but in terms of the 3D arc as well. I think oftentimes 3D is an afterthought with a lot of films. And in this case, we wanted the audience to be the main character. So in other words, take the audience inside the lives of people who live in the city, but also take them underground, take them through history in a way that's really very visceral, and so you feel like you're there.
Talk about the three ladies that are the storytellers in this movie. Why young people, and why those three in particular?
Well, this gets back to the whole novelty question. I think that we're used to seeing Jerusalem, and certainly Israel and Palestine and the Holy Land, in a very political context. We often hear from politicians, we see soldiers and austere images. And so someone early on in the process, one of our advisors actually, he gave me an essay, and it was about young people going around the city of Jerusalem and taking pictures with a still camera. And I love this idea that you could experience the multiple Jerusalems through the eyes of young people. And then when we did the casting, I must have interviewed hundreds of Jews and Christians and Muslims aged 11 to 21. It just so happened that these three young girls, who were 15 or 16 at the time, rose to the top, and they were just charismatic, and they were able to convey the passion that they have for the city, but they were curious about one another. I mean, they weren't poster children for coexistence. They were, for me, they were really authentic. They lived in their own worlds. They didn't have any natural opportunities to meet, necessarily, but they were curious about the other, and I thought that was really intriguing. And the fact that they're women, I think it says something. I do think that part of the world is changing, the Middle East in general, and I think women are at the forefront of that change.
Did it pose problems getting access to some of the areas, having three young women as the protagonists in the stories?
Well, we did get a lot of no's initially at particular locations where, you know, people would say to us, oh, you know, there are Muslims and Christians in the film. Well, no, you're not welcome. Or there are Jews in the film. No, you're not welcome. And they would also say, oh, there are women. Well, no, we're not so interested. Or we just wouldn't get a phone call back. But I have to say that in almost every case, we were able to sit down with people who had a negative reaction and explain why it was important to show the world a sort of a different portrait with different voices. And most places came around. It didn't actually affect anything that we had scripted. And the girls themselves, I think they were just so charming, and we let them be themselves. I didn't script them. In some cases, I just told them to do it in a shorter form. But it was really just hours of interviews with them expressing themselves, and I learned so much from each of them.
I really get the sense that they ended up forming a really interesting relationship with each other towards the end of this.
These three girls would never have met without the film, that's true. And I think when they did on location, we filmed the meeting. We decided not to use it for various reasons. One, it was very talky, it was fascinating because they all had assumptions of one another. But in the end, we decided to go for something that I think is much more powerful, and we leave it open to the audience a little bit. And I will say that we did actually bring the three girls to Toronto and to Washington about a month ago, and that was incredible for me because whereas they were cordial but relatively cold, I mean, after 5 minutes, they sort of ran out of things to talk about when they were in Jerusalem. Here they were forced to spend 2 weeks together in North America, and they really did become friends. And I don't use that word lightly, and they will have disagreements and so forth, but if you watched how they were, within a couple of days, they were loaning each other articles of clothing and restyling each other's hair and joking and very naturally discussing the issues. And that, for me, proves a number of things. One is that in the safety, the relative safety of a theater, you can learn about the other. And that was the goal of the film. I remember when the Muslim girl first saw the movie in Houston, she called me and she said, "You finally got the ending right." And my favorite parts of the movie were watching Nadia and Revital, the other two girls. And that was, you know, for me, it sort of felt like, we've sort of done it in a sense. And that was the goal, is that you could allow a Jew to experience Ramadan in Jerusalem. And you could allow a Muslim to go to a Seder for Passover. But if you told people that from the outset, they would have this resistance to the idea. But these three girls, they were sort of like our Trojan horse, in a sense. We could sort of we could sneak things in, and the audience would be enamored with them, and frankly, they wouldn't even be able to tell them apart after a certain point. And that's kind of saying something as well.
Daniel, after your time in Jerusalem making this documentary, did you develop any new perspectives on holy festivals like Easter?
Well, Easter is a huge part of this movie. One of the things I did earlier on was, along with the other producers, we scouted, and there was an Australian involved as well. One of our early consultants was Arthur Hagopian, an Armenian from Jerusalem, living in Sydney, and he actually flew out and guided us through some of the Easter rituals as it relates to the different churches. Mm. And this is incredible. I mean, you have the Syrian Orthodox Church holding liturgy in Aramaic, the language of Jesus, and the Armenian Orthodox Church holding the washing of the feet ceremony, using elaborately carved butter and so forth. All these kinds of rituals that I knew nothing about. The ceremony of the holy fire, for example, which is just spectacular and has a huge role in the movie. So for the Catholic world, for the Orthodox world, for the Protestant world as well, there are all of these different rituals and manifestations of belief. And again, it makes Jerusalem so much richer because you can appreciate all this. I wouldn't necessarily recommend someone buying a ticket. Easter's a wonderful time to go. It's very crowded. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's green. But I would say that much cheaper is actually just buying a ticket to the IMAX. Yeah. and attending some of these ceremonies. And it makes you really appreciate the wonder and majesty of Jerusalem. You know, and this is a city we hear so much about, but we rarely hear about the richness, the artistic richness, the historical richness, the spiritual richness. It often tends to be clouded by a sense of doom, no hope, this conflict, this tension. And I think it's more important, actually, to look at the roots of the universal love for Jerusalem that everyone seems to have.
Daniel, we're almost out of phone credit, so as we wrap up, now that Jerusalem has been so well received by Muslim, Jewish and Christian audiences around the world, what are you happiest about? What conversations are you hearing people have after they've seen your documentary?
Well, I knew that the subject was filled with all these minds, and I was expecting a controversy coming out of it. Just, it's a polemical subject and so forth, and I've been quite pleasantly surprised that, for the most part, Jewish audiences and Christian audiences of different denominations, of course, and Muslim audiences have been moved by the film. And my goal was that everyone, no matter what their background, even a secular audience, someone who doesn't really give a hoot about religion, would be able to get something out of this film that spoke to them and be surprised by learning at the other. I had a Hindu come up to me and say, look, I'm not Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, but after I saw this film, I told my wife, our next trip is to Jerusalem. And I think that speaks to the universality of the place and its role in our consciousness, certainly in our imagination. I've had people who've lived their entire lives in Jerusalem who came up and said, I thought I knew Jerusalem, but you showed me two-thirds of the city that I had never seen before.
Daniel Ferguson, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for Jerusalem.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.